south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, back in the saddle again. Speaking of saddles, how many of you guys and gals out there have ever ridden a horse? You know, I still don't get the fact that almost every young girl loves horses. Hey, I like horses too, but I don't love them. What I don't like and what I don't love is cats. And rats rhymes with cats. And I hate rats. Don't y'all hate rats? I don't think anybody likes rats. Though I did have a friend back in grade school up in Chicago who had a pet rat in a cage and all that, you know, white rat. Was always afraid to pet it, thought it would take a chunk out of me. Anyway, now, on that horse thing, I know it's a very expensive hobby, but down here in Latin America, not so much at all. I know a few couples, a few older gringo couples who came down on their plan B, and the lady always wanted a horse, and she got one. And one of those ladies, she tells me up in the States she could never afford to board and feed her own horse, much less afford the veterinary bills. Speaking of horse veterinary bills, I wonder if she got any of that horse paste, you know, ivermectin? Remember when those bullshit rumors were going around? I still say if I ever ran into that asswipe Dr. Falsey face-to-face, I'd give him one right in the kisser. Then I'd give him an overdose of horse paste and about 30 COVIDiot boosters for good measure. But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah, talking about owning horses here in Latin America. If you're into it, it's eminently affordable. Down here, it's like a fifth of the cost, so very affordable if that's your thing. It ain't mine, but it could be yours. This might sound strange to you, but I never in my whole life saw a rat, except on the dissecting table in high school biology class. Aside from that, I never saw a rat that wasn't a white rat till I moved to Latin America. Now, I'm well aware if you live in the big city like Chicago, New York, New Jersey, wherever, people do see rats, especially in crap neighborhoods where the garbage is piling up. That's one of the reasons you occasionally see a rat here and there in Latin America. Garbage piling up. Not to say they don't have garbage pickup. And it is on a certain schedule. Problem is, they let it pile up in boxes and bags. It's generally left right out on the street, not in garbage cans. It seems having a nice garbage can with a sealed top has not settled into the culture of Latin America yet. Even in some of the nicest gated guarded communities, you'll see people often just tossing their garbage bags out on the front curb. Or they might have a garbage can or 55-gallon drum with an open top, no cover. Which is an open invitation to dogs, rats, cockroaches, and the occasional street urchin. Personally, I don't get it because you can go down to the local ferreteria, you know, hardware store, and buy a nice, solid garbage can with a top that seals quite nicely. And yes, some people actually buy them. Gringos and expats do. Of course, there's always that lack of maintenance thing, too. Because, you know, you could have a nice garbage can, but they don't last forever. Maybe a year, two, three, five. Depends how you take care of them. And if you whack them with your car in the driveway or out on the street, then, of course, the lid doesn't fit right anymore. And it's an open invitation to dogs, rats, and even worse. Now, if you live in a nice gated, guarded community, there'll be a couple of maintenance guys and gardeners taking care of the grounds all the time. And so you'll probably never, ever see a rat or a stray dog in the colony. That's what they call neighborhoods down here, colonies. Colonias, like, you know, a bee colony. That's what I thought when I first heard that phrase being used, bee colony. It doesn't quite fit in the traditional American mind, but you get used to it. What do you think of when you hear the word colony? Anyway, I'm not trying to give you the impression that you're going to see rats everywhere. You're not. Sometimes months and months will go by. I don't see a single rat. But when I do, it's on garbage day, especially in congested areas of the big city. But then again, I just read a stat that says that New York has 10 times as many rats as people. I think that number includes politicians. Now, as far as having rats or mice in the house, God, I think I've lived in at least 15 to 20 apartments and houses since I've been here in Latin America. In only two of those places have I ever seen an actual rat or a mouse. And both of those places were first-floor rentals, never a house that I built myself. So then how'd they get in? Well, it's because, as I've mentioned many times before, Latinos don't use proper weather stripping. They don't use weather stripping at all. 9 out of 10 Latinos don't even know what you're talking about if you mention the word. And that, of course, means there's small spaces and openings under every single door. Window frames aren't sealed, so they leak air. But mostly, if critters are going to come into your house, like cucarachas, mice, rats, geckos, or snakes, they're going to sneak in under that door space where there is no weather strip. So my advice, you know what that is, get weather stripping as soon as you move into a place. And normally, it's not at all necessary on the windows, but man, put that weather stripping on the bottom of the entrance doors. You will thank me for that advice later. Now, I know what some of you newer listeners are thinking. Wait a minute. Johnny just mentioned snakes coming in under the front door. No way. I don't want any part of that. Well, you know, I'd say about a year ago now, on a previous show, I told my snake in the house story. I know I scared a few gringa expat wannabe ladies with that story. Stuff like that's easily preventable if you've got weather stripping under the entrance doors. And it's not as if snakes are everywhere. They're just hiding out on your door stoop, waiting to sneak in. Out of all the houses and rentals I've been in here in Latin America, like I said, 15 to 20 anyway, there was only one place where I had a snake problem. They actually snuck into the house twice. It was in one of my houses way out in the boonies, surrounded by nothing but tropical cloud forests and lots of overgrown trees and brush. Nearest neighbor, maybe 3-4 blocks away. And that's right, no weather stripping under the entrance doors. Oh, and they weren't gigantic monster snakes. They were only little ones, about a foot long. Babies, you know, because that little space under the door is only so wide. But man, I'll tell you, I hit the hardware store in a hurry. Because, as mentioned previously, most all big hardware stores have a section with weather stripping, even though almost no one ever uses the stuff. How can you tell? Well, because when you sort through it, it's all dusty and you get that dust on your fingers as you're going through the various types on the shelves and in the bins. All right, moving on. Let's take an email from Johnny. He says, Johnny, I haven't heard anything lately about El Salvador's volcano bonds, where, as I understand it, the country of El Salvador would grant residency with the purchase of, let's say, $100,000 worth of those bonds. He says, I couldn't find much on a search except for one report that it's been scrapped. Is that true? Anyhow, Johnny, thanks for the show. I listened to all of your shows. Signed, John. All right, thanks for that, John. You know, I've got quite a stack of emails from people asking that very same question because, I don't know why, but it seems like all kinds of people listening to this show who've got Bitcoin and crypto are also interested in buying some Bitcoin volcano bonds from El Salvador. How'd that happen? Could it be that because on this show we've been talking about Bitcoin and recommending cryptos since about 2013? Anyway, as you probably well know, Bitcoin's outperformed every single investment vehicle over the past year. It's up 150%. And I predict, though I'm not a guru, I'm not clairvoyant, I don't have a crystal ball, but people ask me all the time, what do I think is going to happen to Bitcoin and crypto in the next year? Well, with those 14 ETFs slated to be approved by the SEC in the next couple months, and the Bitcoin halving coming, I think it's in April, right? It comes every 4 years, and they've got another coming up just a couple of months. And the fact that the U.S. government is completely and utterly bankrupt, beyond broke, and that even government predictions themselves, which are almost always wrong, and underestimate reality and put a positive spin on things as if they're doing something right. Anyway, government stats themselves say that within 5 years, every single dollar collected in taxes in the U.S. will go to pay debt and or entitlement programs, which means there'll not be 1 cent left over to pay for actual physical infrastructure programs. But you knew that already, right? So anyway, my prediction for Bitcoin in 2024, and I'm being very conservative here, 100 grand. Listen, it went up 150% in the last year. It's at 42,000 as we speak. That means it only has to pop another 120%, and we're at 100K. Now, about those volcano bonds out of El Salvador, there was a lot of talk about them over the last couple of years, right? But as Bitcoin dropped and fell into a bear market, hanging around 15 to 25K for about a year or more, that meant the Bitcoin that El Salvador had in its treasury was in the red, taking a loss. But now that Bitcoin has passed 30K, like I said, it's around 42 as we speak, I just happened to see a little press release yesterday that came out of El Salvador saying El Salvador's Bitcoin investment is now in the black by $30 million. And so those volcano bonds are on the table again. Not only that, Standard & Poor, you know, that rates bond issues and such, and Moody's, you've heard of them, have upgraded the quality of Salvador's bonds twice in the last year. Funny thing is, too, that almost never happens with third world countries. Standard & Poor's and Moody's almost always downgrade the bonds as countries get deeper and deeper into debt, even technically bankrupt, like Argentina, Venezuela, and Italy, Greece, and Turkey, too. As well as, guess who? The U.S. government, who were, by the way, just downgraded again by Moody's and Standard & Poor's. Yep, you heard that right. The U.S. government's credit rating, their bond rating, has just been downgraded by Moody's and Standard & Poor's. In your lifetime, can you ever remember that happening? Yeah, well, the lamestream news media is not making any kind of big deal about it or reporting on it at all. But it is, you know, a really big event. Anyway, as for John's question about volcano bonds in El Salvador, we can expect to hear a lot more information, a lot more details coming out in the next couple months. Because, you see, it was all sort of dependent on Salvador's own Bitcoin stash. And being that they were in the red for the last year and a half, they've had nothing but a constant barrage of bad international press on the subject. But now that Salvador's Bitcoin investment is solidly in the black, Bukele is looking like a hero. Oddly enough, though, the international press media hasn't said a thing. Typical, huh? Anyway, I understand that all the financial particulars regarding those volcano bonds are in place. They've got the international brokers set up to sell the product. It's just a matter of good timing because, you know, the IMF, World Bank, the Bank for International Settlements, etc., they absolutely hate the idea of volcano bonds tied to Bitcoin. Why? Because they've got no fiduciary control over them at all. Volcano bonds will be completely outside the regular banking system. And the IMF and the big banksters absolutely hate that. Which is why, if you've heard any press at all about those volcano bonds, it's been bad press from you-know-who. The captured Lame Street Media. By the way, just yesterday, Bukele posted some very interesting things on Twitter, X. Let me read some of them here. He says, contrary to the hopes of many first world bankers, El Salvador's Bitcoin investments are in the black after literally thousands and thousands of articles and hit pieces that ridiculed our supposed losses for the last year and a half, all of which were calculated based on Bitcoin's market price at the time. However, Bukele goes on to say, now that we're well into the black, international media sources are strangely silent. Then Bukele adds that we have no intention of selling our Bitcoin. We are fully aware the price will fluctuate, and it doesn't affect our long-term strategy at all. He says, since October 2021, about 3 years ago, the country has purchased Bitcoin 11 times at various prices, with its most recent purchase taking place well below the $20,000 mark in late 2022. And at today's Bitcoin prices, El Salvador is well into the black, showing a profit on all Bitcoin investments to date. Then, he says, get this, and it was just yesterday, it's important that the naysayers and the authors of these hit pieces take back their statements, Bukele posted this morning. The responsible thing to do would to be for them to issue retractions and offer apologies, or at the very least, acknowledge that El Salvador is yielding a profit. We are well into the black. Just as they repeatedly reported hundreds and hundreds of times that we were incurring terrible losses, putting our country's economic foundations in danger. Meanwhile, the opposite is true, with El Salvador continuing to stand as the foremost example of national crypto adoption, with its Bitcoin experiment demonstrating an alternative path for countries all over the world that might seek to escape dollars as the world reserve asset, and to escape the dominance and control of international central banks and bankers. In other related news, get this. All eyes are now on Argentina as its new president, Javier Milei, a libertarian, has announced he will dismantle the country's central bank and allow Bitcoin to be used freely, along with dollars and gold, and any other currency its citizens might choose. So, yes, folks, Bitcoin and crypto's time has come. Now, personally, my own family has asked me lots of questions about Bitcoin, and I recommend to them, and of course it isn't always possible, for them to own at least one Bitcoin. Because it's my feeling, and a lot of friends and nerd buddies who are a hell of a lot smarter than I am, that if you have just one Bitcoin, within 5 years it'll be so valuable you may never have to work again. Now, that's not investment advice, but advice I've given my own family. And guess what? About half of my family bought in to Bitcoin when it was between $4,000 and $5,000. And, you know, I tried to get them in at 1,000. Oh, and they whined and they hesitated. Then it went to 3, then 4 grand. And they said, what the hell, I'll give it a shot. Some of them bought just one, some of them 3 or 4. And guess what? Every single one of them has about a 10x on their investment. Oh, but they whined and hesitated when Bitcoin was around 5K. But here's how I convinced him. I said, look, you buy what you can at 5K, 1 or 2 or 3, whatever. And I said to him at the next halving, which is going to be around April 2024, I said, if they're worth less than 5,000 bucks, I'll buy them back from you at 5K, what you put in. Well, they like that deal, all right, so they bought in. And guess what? Now it's 42K. And my next prediction, and it's not investment advice now, we've got another 10x coming within, I'd say, the next 3 years. But hey, if you don't believe me, go ahead, sit on the sideline. That way you'll have a good story to tell your grandkids how you missed out on the opportunity of a lifetime. Actually, you missed out on 2 or 3 opportunities of a lifetime because you had a chance to get in really early when it was 100 or 500 or 1,000. You know what I've found so funny about crypto in general and Bitcoin? Everybody you talk to has an opinion on it. They've had it all along, since its inception, maybe 12, 13 years ago. Especially people who never took the chance to buy any of it. They always have lots of opinions, almost all of them negative. In fact, unless you bring it up, most people don't even think about crypto. They're not in the industry. They only casually read or hear about it sometimes. And what they read is in the controlled lamestream media, so it's all negative. They don't have any plans to buy it, and they don't like it when other people buy it and say, hey, look how much it's gone up. They've got 0 Bitcoin, 0 altcoins, but lots of opinions when you ask them. Almost never a positive opinion either. They secretly want Bitcoin to go to zero because they don't have any. They missed out on the first 2 or 3 big runs, and they secretly resent the fact that some of their buddies, some nerd guy friend they knew, told them about it a long time ago and is kicking ass, and they never pulled the trigger. Deep down, they don't like that. You know, I see it all the time. You speak to someone about crypto. They've got 0 crypto, though they say they always meant to get some. But they won't because they're so sure that Bitcoin is a scam or a Ponzi scheme. They talk about hearing this guy or that guy who lost all his coins somewhere, and they don't want to be that guy. Not realizing that stuff rarely happens anymore. That only happens these days when people are stupid about where they store their coins, or more technically, their 12 or 24 word keys. That only happens to people who keep their coins on exchanges, like Coinbase, Binance, or Bybit, and not in a cold wallet in their own possession, like a Trezor or a Nano. If you've got a hard storage wallet, bad things can't happen to you, but guess what? A hard storage wallet costs maybe 70 to 100 bucks. You wouldn't believe how many people don't want to make that little investment just to keep their coins safe. On top of that, people don't like the fact that they missed out in the early days on Tesla, Microsoft, Amazon. That's why a lot of people secretly want to see Elon Musk crash and burn. That's how people feel who didn't pull the trigger on Bitcoin. So anyway, many times I'll be talking to a gringo, and they'll say, crypto's a scam. And I'll say, did you ever have any? They'll say, no. Have you ever transacted with the stuff? They'll say, no. They've got 0 experience, but massive negative opinions on the subject. You could tell they secretly do not like the idea of anyone else making money on crypto because they haven't. Expat Eddie says it's like someone you run into who's just won the lottery. He's all happy and excited to tell you about it, and secretly, you're thinking, shut up, why don't you? Lucky asshole. And I'll tell you what's going to happen. 100% this is going to happen. Those same people are going to have a massive shock. They're going to get slapped in the face when someday, very soon too, they'll wake up and see on the news there's been a fantastic financial disaster. Maybe the U.S. announces it's placing harsh currency controls on everyone who's got a bank account, like what's happening in Argentina and Venezuela right now? Or maybe some first world country or two or 10 will declare bankruptcy and their sovereign bonds like U.S. Treasuries take a huge hit or default? Or maybe yours and a dozen other first world banks will fail. They'll lock up your deposits. You won't be able to make any wire transfers or withdrawals. And that's when the average non-crypto user is going to panic and they're going to pile in, sending Bitcoin from 100 grand to 500 grand and beyond. Personally, I think when Bitcoin approaches 100K, that's when the world's going to wake up. All the people that never had a single crypto that kept saying Bitcoin is a scam, a Ponzi scheme. That's when all the stragglers and laggards are going to jump in. They'll become true believers, a little late, but nevertheless true believers. And all you guys and gals out there who've got just one Bitcoin, something you bought at a grand or 5 grand, 10 grand, 20, whatever, you'll be patting yourself on the back. You'll consider yourself one of the luckiest SOBs in the world. At that moment, you'll realize you've got yourself a winning lottery ticket. You've heard of FU money, right? Now you've got some of your very own FU money and you really never have to work again if you don't want to. Oh, and by the way, if you're still confused about Bitcoin and crypto and blockchain and all that, you want to get in, but you don't know who to trust because you've heard about all those scammers out there. You know what? That's no excuse. It's never been a good excuse. Not if you're a frequent listener to this show, anyway. Remember, our own Captain Mango, who's been into crypto for 10 years now. He'll train you up, get you up to speed over the computer and on a series of signal calls. He'll hold your hand and walk you through some real transactions, show you how to get in and out of crypto exchanges, how to change between various crypto products, how to cash in and out of dollars, and how to use one of those famous offline hard wallets to keep your private keys absolutely safe. If you're interested, just shoot Captain Mango an email at BewareCaptainMango@gmail.com. That's BewareCaptainMango@gmail.com. Oh, and remember, you don't have to buy a whole Bitcoin or a whole Ethereum. You can buy the tiniest little fraction thereof. In fact, many people who don't have lots of dough, dollar cost average, that is every week or every month, they buy, let's say, $100 or $200 worth of crypto at that day's price, and in no time, it really adds up. You've heard of that buying method, right? Dollar cost averaging? Anyway, ask Captain Mango about it. He's your man. He's trained up quite a few of our listeners, and if you come to my next Expat Insider Seminar, you'll hear him talk about it. Now, if you recall, I announced on last week's show, my next Expat Insider Seminar will start Friday, March 8th, 2024, through March 15th, 2024. It's a week long, actually 8 days long. And the price does include 8 nights in our hotels. So for all the info, agenda, and sign-up details, just go to expatplanb.com and click on the seminar link. That's expatplanb.com. Once again, repeat offenders will get a $1,000 discount off that price. We always have repeat offenders, you know. And really, if you want to know if the seminar is worth it, repeat offenders are the best advertisement of all. I mean, really, think about it. If it wasn't worth it, why would so many people repeat the seminar not once or twice, but 3 different times? Yeah, we've had people repeat the seminar 3 times. Must be something extra special going on. Could be. Or is it maybe because I'm so tall, dark, and handsome? Nah, can't be. I'm a solid 6. Anyway, mark your calendar for Friday, March 8th, 2024 through March 15th. Sign up soon to get in on those early bird discounts. Just go to expatplanb.com. All right, now an email from Chris. He says, Johnny, I wonder if you've ever talked about fire safety in Latin America. For example, so many of the hotels and hostels in Latin America have really heavy security bars to keep the bad people out. Some even have steel locking gates that can only open electronically from the front desk, which seems to me gives very limited options for getting out in the case of a fire. I guess the one advantage is that these buildings are typically 100% cement and steel, so the fire probably doesn't spread nearly as fast. All right, that comes from Chris. Well, Chris, you know, after being down here a couple of decades now, occasionally you do hear about a fire here and there, but it's almost always in the ragtag, really horseshit sections of town where people haphazardly build stuff with wood and don't have the dough to pour concrete. there are seasons, too, where you can predict there'll be an occasional fire. Like around Christmas and Easter, where people blow off massive amounts of fireworks. Even then, it's a building or two in the crap neighborhoods that catch fire, because they're stick-built. And most all the time when you drive through those neighborhoods, you know there's no zoning and no one's got any building permits to build that kind of stuff because it's all ragtag, very tight quarters, and kind of a fire trap in general. By the way, if you're staying in a hotel or hostel that's stick-built, not made of concrete and steel, all I can think is that you must be on an extremely low backpacker budget. Because even most $10 a night joints are concrete, steel, and glass. By the way, I once had a big-time kitchen fire. That's because the natural gas line melted and caught fire because the idiots didn't use the right gauge tubing or the right thickness or quality. They've got building codes down here, all right, but remember, no one inspects to see if they're following them. Once again, it's a case of Latino contractors cutting corners. It's the honor system, and some ain't so honorable. Now, it took me about 1 minute to put out the fire because I have a handy fire extinguisher in my kitchen. All charged up and hanging on the wall. Yeah, you can buy them down here in the big hardware stores for maybe 10 to 20 bucks. You really ought to have one or two. Now, if I didn't have that extinguisher, I'm sure my kitchen cabinets would have been up in smoke, but that would be about the end of it. Nothing else in that building could catch fire. It was all concrete and steel. Oh, and one other thing I should mention. In the big markets, oftentimes the people live there. Tienda on the first floor and stick-built apartment above. Crowded as hell and people living right on top of each other. So naturally, every year or so, there's a big fire in one of those places and it's a disaster. Whole blocks go up in smoke. But rest assured, if you're the average gringo living down here and enjoying your plan B, you'll be living in a house or apartment that's cement block and concrete in a place that's almost impossible to catch fire. Though I've visited a few houses, and I've been in a few kitchens where the cook or mommy or grandma who's ever making dinner has had a kitchen fire, a grease fire, because they love to cook with pans full of grease and deep fryers. Pretty much why so many people are overweight, too. So there is that risk of a grease fire in the kitchen. I've seen a few of those. But again, any damage is very limited as long as the place is made out of concrete, block, and steel. My advice? Go to the hardware store, buy a nice fire extinguisher, or maybe two. Put one in the laundry room and in the kitchen. Why the laundry room? Well, if you've got a gas dryer, that's why.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.